Today on Vox Talks, the economic impact of a different global pandemic. Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. In the 5 years from 1347, the Black Death spread across Europe and the Middle East, killing about 40% of the population. Well, of course, at the time, there was no government support for the victims, there was no policy response, and there was no organised healthcare. Well, there's been an enormous amount of economic research into the Black Death and its impact, and a new CEPR discussion paper takes in much of this research and provides an overview not just of the short and long-run effects of this plague, but of how they fit into existing economic frameworks and models. Mark Koyama of George Mason University, he's also a CEPR fellow and someone who's done his own research into the Black Death, is one of the authors, and he joins me today. Mark, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Clearly, COVID-19's on our minds at the moment. It's a devastating event, but nothing matches the impact of the Black Death, does it? How does the mortality of the two pandemics compare?
So as you said in the opening statements, the consensus these days is at least 40% of the population of Europe died from the Black Death over the course of about 5 years. So that, I think, puts it in perspective. Previously, historians were skeptical of contemporary medieval accounts, which said maybe a third of humanity had died. But the modern research, based on archaeological evidence and digging up plague pits, essentially confirms these high estimates. So 40% is a conservative estimate. The disease is mostly bubonic plague. So I'll distinguish between bubonic plague and pneumonic plague. Bubonic plague has its name from the buboes, which characterize the victims. Bubonic plague has a case fatality rate of about 70%. So 7 in 10 people who catch bubonic plague, we think, will die. Pneumonic plague, where the disease becomes spread person to person, and it's in the respiratory system. So people are kind of coughing and sneezing on each other and spreading it that way, as opposed to bubonic plague, which is spread predominantly by the fleas living on black rats and other kind of rodents and mammals. Pneumonic plague is even deadlier. So think about a 9 in 10 chance of dying. Compare that to COVID, we're talking about an orders of magnitude of difference. We don't actually know the case fatality rate of COVID because so many people get it and are not necessarily tested positive, but it's probably less than 1%, I would guess. And the Black Death is a much more devastating disease if you catch it, conditional on catching it.
Now, one of the things I noticed when I was reading your paper is just the sheer volume of economic work that's been done on it. Why are economists so fascinated by an event that, well, it happened almost 700 years ago now?
So this is the biggest mortality shock in European history, certainly probably in world history. And it is a proportional shock. So we didn't find other diseases which are unbelievably devastating. So the influenza of 1918 or smallpox epidemics, yellow fever, none of these compare to a Black Death in terms of a scale. If you want to see like the most devastating epidemic in recorded history, you've got to read about the Black Death. Now, from an economic history perspective, there's been a long literature which sees epidemic disease as playing a key role in economic history. So this goes back to William McNeill. And the Black Death then is linked to various historical events of interest. Now, how important it was for these events is going to be a matter of debate and discussion and controversy amongst historians. But people link it to the Renaissance. People link it to the so-called Little Divergence, which takes place between Northern and Southern Europe after around 1500. And we also link it to even the Great Divergence, which is the term economic historians use to explain the divergence between East Asia, particularly China, and Europe after around 1700. So it's seen as potentially a key point in European or world economic history.
Part of what the paper does is to review that existing research on the Black Death. How good is our data on the Black Death now? Where does it come from?
The data is both extremely rich and also, in some respects, missing key things we would like to know. That's the nature of a lot of data from a pre-industrial world. So first and foremost, we have different types of chroniclers' records, different types of tax records, different types of evidence about how severe the mortality rate was on a very local level for Europe. There are things we don't know about the Black Death, which I'll get to. We know much less about its effect in Eastern Europe. We also know much less about its effect in Asia. We know it was very bad in the Middle East, but we don't have as fine-grained data as we do for Europe. Europe, but a lot of sources survive for Europe, which allow us to piece together rough estimates for the Black Death. These are extremely noisy. For example, we know that Florence and Venice were hit very severely by the Black Death, and Milan was more or less spared, roughly. In the paper, we use data compiled by a team of scientists headed by Christakos, who read essentially all the different records available and came up with these kind of ballpark estimates. So that's what we use in our research. But we know these are noisy. So Milan is coded in the data we have as a 15% mortality. But really what we're saying is it's a relatively low mortality rate compared to Florence or Venice. And that's something we're very sure about. That's confirmed by many pieces of evidence. But the precise numbers, yeah, those are ballpark figures. We know from COVID that getting accurate numbers is always difficult. But we do know about the relative severity. So we can make quite strong statements about which parts of Europe, which cities were hit worse than others. With a caveat that new data is always emerging and scientific research can invalidate consensus we currently have.
Given that new data is always emerging, do we still have blind spots in this data? You mentioned that some of the geographical coverage is incomplete.
So geographical coverage is incomplete. Another issue of kind of ongoing research is the extent to which the plague was indiscriminate. The traditional consensus has been that it's indiscriminate, somewhat different to many other diseases. So many other diseases kind of select people based on kind of pre-existing conditions, but the plague, we're told by contemporaries, did not do so. So rich and poor died, at least in the initial outbreak. But that claim is subject to, you know, continuous revision. So there's recent research looking at bodies from plague pits, seeing if they were more likely even a population to have infirmities as visible from their skeletons. I would like there to be more information on Eastern Europe, but I don't think that's an area where to me it's possible to get new data, because a lot of the data we have in Western Europe is from kind of these written records, and there are just fewer written records for Eastern Europe. The other thing we don't know as much about is the virulence of the disease declines over time. The first outbreak in Europe is in Sicily. Genoese merchants from the Crimea bring it to Messina, and Sicily is a kind of a trading center of southern Europe, of the Mediterranean, and from Sicily it spreads to Marseille, it spreads to Spain, it very quickly gets to England. So England gets a Black Death relatively early on, despite being quite remote from Sicily, and so England gets it very severely. So over time, the Black Death seems to be a little bit less severe. So by the time it gets to Germany or Eastern Europe, the mortality rates seem to be a little bit lower. But Black Death is a one-off event. It's just a tremendous shock to the European economy. But of course, the plague doesn't go away. It's endemic to Europe for the next two centuries, and it reoccurs quite frequently. When it reoccurs, it's never as devastating as the first outbreak. And we know less about why that is.
You mentioned that it was, for example, very severe in Florence, less severe in Milan. Do we know about which local conditions or what type of communities would have accelerated the spread of the Black Death?
There we can be more concrete. We summarize it in this paper, but we also have another paper where we kind of document this more carefully. So things that historians or what kind of people who are not experts on it might suppose to be true and not true. For example, population density is not correlated with the severity of a Black Death. This is consistent with what we observed from 19th century outbreaks of bubonic plague in China and India. Rural areas are hit as bad as urban areas. And the reason for this, we think, again, this is a supposition, is the prevalence of the main vector, and not the only vector, but main vector, black rats. To the extent that black rat, we know about how black rats were located in medieval Europe, they seem to have been as equally spread in urban areas as in rural areas. They're quite territorial. So denser human population is not correlated with denser rat population. And so rural areas can be hit very bad, as well as urban areas. In our paper, we show there's absolutely no relationship between population size of a city and the severity of a plague. Small places were hit very hard by it. Similarly, other characteristics we don't find as being as important as you might think. So again, it's natural to assume being on a trade route means you're more exposed to the Black Death. But for the reason I said just a minute ago, the fact that the severity of the Black Death is at its highest early on in the pandemic, it's not being on a trade route per se which predicts your Black Death mortality. Rather, it's your discounted market distance to the center of a pandemic. Just as in the COVID case, if you had a lot of flights to Milan or to Wuhan in March 2020, you would get a very hard outbreak of COVID. Similarly, if you were closely connected to Sicily in 1348, that would predict a more severe outbreak on average. But just being on a river or on a train network or on a Roman road on its own is not really associated with being more severe. So the initial outbreak doesn't seem to be very correlated with city characteristics. It's actually quite quasi-random or exogenous in the sense that where traders happened to go, that determined who got it first, and that determined the mortality rates. Messina and Sicily didn't have to be the hotspot of the European outbreak. The traders from the Crimea could have gone to other European cities, other Italian cities.
You use these death rates to investigate the evidence for two economic models about how the economy would respond afterwards, and the Malthusian model and a Smithian model as well. Could you explain a little bit about those models, how they differ?
Yeah, so the Malthusian model is named after, you know, the early 19th century economist Thomas Malthus, who's famous for his pessimistic predictions about the consequences of population growth. Malthus provides a very powerful framework for thinking about the pre-industrial world. The cliched kind of statement about Malthus is that he was correct about everything apart from his own time and the post-industrial world. So in a pre-industrial world, we do indeed observe, on average, a negative relationship between population growth and per capita income and real wages. The idea being, when land is abundant, it's a lot of land per person, then incomes of ordinary people, farmers, say, are relatively high because they have a lot of resources per person. And as population growth increases, then their incomes go down. And so the Malthusian view has been articulated by prominent economists, Oda Galore and David Weil, have developed the unified growth theory in which they model the pre-industrial world as, broadly speaking, Malthusian. Gregory Clark wrote a book about 10 years ago, The World to Arms, in which he characterizes this world as Malthusian. In a Malthusian environment, the Black Death isn't bad for ordinary people, conditional on you surviving it. Prior to the Black Death, England, given its level of technology, was quite crowded, it was quite densely populated. There wasn't much good quality land, and incomes were low because of people were, you know, the marginal worker was earning a living on a tiny piece of not very nice agricultural land. Now you've had 40% of the population die. Within a couple of years, the Malthusian model would predict this labor scarcity would lead to wages being bid up and incomes going up for ordinary people. So the Malthusian model is a good way of thinking about an economy which is agrarian, in which farming is the source of income, and it predicts this inverse relationship between per capita income and population. And epidemics have a silver lining in this world. Contrast that to Smithian view, named after Adam Smith. Smith's view of the economy is based on not just land per person, but things like the division of labor. The division of labor depends on the extent of the market. And the extent of the market depends on, you know, there being a dense amount of demand. So in a more densely populated environment, you're going to have more market niches. You're going to have more opportunities for specialization. And trade is crucial to this. And so from a Smithian perspective, the Black Death is potentially devastating because certainly initially trade routes collapse, as you can imagine. And they take decades to be kind of reconstituted, reconstructed. So there's a simplification of the economy. There's a return to subsistence to some degree. Both these models are in some sense accurate. So both these forces are at play in the Black Death. But there's a question of which one deserves more emphasis. That's what we discuss in this paper. And we gather evidence collected by other economic historians, both on the wage side. Gregory Clark, Robert Allen have done fantastic work collecting and updating real wage theories. And more recently, Steve Broadbury and various co-authors have collected per capita GDP estimates for certain European economies going back to Black Death era. And so what we show in general is that when you plot real wages against population, you find what looks like this Malthusian story. So real wages do go up after the Black Death, but they take a while. So they don't go up immediately for various reasons, which I may get into, institutional reasons, people trying to block these wage increases. But over decades, there's definitely a big increase in real wages. But when you look at per capita GDP, you find it goes up, but not by nearly as much as the real wages. So that's consistent with both these stories being relevant. And we find in different economies, these matter more. So researchers have shown that in, for example, Spain, the Malthusian story is dominated by the Smithian story, possibly because Spain was just more scarcely populated to begin with. So a population collapse just leads to markets collapsing, and you don't find a rise in per capita incomes. But in England, you do. So different economies experience these forces differently.
And is this a short-run story, or can we say anything about what happens in the long run as well based on these models?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We should clarify terms because the short run here, we're thinking about not like, you know, the short run necessarily in a macroeconomic sense of a couple of months or a year, thinking about a couple of decades out, maybe. Certainly the medium run is a couple of decades out. And in the long run, does this event, which is so seismic, so huge, does it have effect centuries after it takes place? So in the short run, I'll work through the evidence for England, which is best documented, I think. So the initial impact is devastating. Trade stops, you know, grain is not being collected in the field. So there's a short-run effect, which is pretty devastating. But after a few years, we observe nominal wages really going up, and there's also inflation. The initial effect is inflation because it's a negative supply shock, and also wage inflation. But the inflation probably outpaces the wage inflation. But the lords and landlords are resisting these increasing wages. So they pass legislation which tries to hold wages down. In the short run, this is relatively successful. In the medium run, it's not. So within a couple of decades, not just nominal wages, but also real wages are increasing. So within a couple of decades, real wages are increasing. increasing. And that's putting big pressure on the institutions which used to govern the medieval economy. So the most important of these is serfdom. Prior to the Black Death, around half of the population in England were serfs. So they owed labor dues to their landlords. And that institution breaks down. It goes away within kind of 50, 60, 70 years, more gradually in some places than others, and we don't know the full extent. But certainly within 100 years, there are basically no more serfs in England. Per capita income goes up much more slowly than real wages. So there's definitely an increase in fall in inequality as well taking place. Those are the effects in the medium run. In the longer run, this is kind of going to get more controversial. One view is, so this is put forward in a well-known paper by Nico Voigtlander and Joachim Voff. One view is that the rise in per capita incomes generates demand for urban-based manufactured products. And so urbanization increases. Demand for urban goods goes up, urbanization occurs. So that's another positive effect of Black Death. So there's a shift in the structure of the economy. The other thing which we've found some evidence for is a shift in the location of the European economy. So, the center. So if you think about the pre-Black Death period, the richest part of Europe is Italy. The most developed part of Europe is Italy. Italy's prosperity is based on trade with the Middle East. Silk, spices, all these things are flowing through to the Middle East, or actually through kind of Mongol-controlled Central Asia. And Italian merchants are taking this to Europe and then selling it in Northern Europe. After the Black Death, this pattern gradually starts to change. So the Italians lose their dominance. And by, say, 1500, you're finding kind of German merchants, the Hansa, doing very well. And later you go get the English and the Dutch kind of moving into these European markets. One argument is that the Black Death in the long run has a negative impact on Southern Europe and a very positive impact on Northern Europe. Whether or not this is accepted is still a matter of debate. And another view thinks the Italian economy only occurs later, not due to the Black Death, but due to other events like the discovery of the Americas. And it's hard to disentangle these. But certainly one view is the Black Death is kind of crucial in laying the conditions for this rise of Northwest Europe. And I'll just add two more points on that, I think. The European marriage pattern is another important institution which a lot of economic historians have worked upon. So Tina de Moore and John Leighton van Zanden, as well as Voigtlander and Voff, have a paper on the European marriage pattern. The European marriage pattern is this observation that people in Northwest Europe tend to marry later than in the rest of Eurasia. And if they marry later, that has important implications for population growth. In a Malthusian world, it actually allows you to get higher per capita incomes, higher living standards, and it lays the foundations for future institutional developments. Again, this is all controversial. There's a lot we don't know, but at least one view says that the European marriage pattern was strengthened in the wake of the Black Death. And the shock of the Black Death, the labor scarcity led to women working more, and that was the force which pushed these economies towards a higher range of first marriage.
What aspects of the Black Death do you focus on, Mark?
We have three papers. One, the survey paper, which I'm kind of describing here, and that's an overview. We're focusing as much on other people's research and the way I've done in this talk, as well as our own. We have also got a working paper where we're looking at the impact on cities. So in that paper, we combine this local level mortality rate data that I've described with widely used data on city growth in medieval and early modern Europe. And so then we can see if being hit by the Black Death more severely affects your subsequent growth rate. And what we find is overall recovery within about 200 years on absolute city populations, but we find a lot of heterogeneity. So some cities grow faster than others, and we're also able to investigate the role of internal migration and trade routes, being on the coast, being on the rivers, as whether or not those factors matter most for whether or not a city recovers. And we find big cities like London and Paris and Florence do bounce back, but at the lower level of the city distribution, cities like Montpellier doesn't recover its population until after 1800, it's pre-Black Death. So there's a lot of heterogeneity, whereas some cities like, say, Hamburg was a very small city before the Black Death, and it booms afterwards, and we kind of have some explanations for why that's the case. The other research I've worked on, also with Noel Johnson and Remy Jebwab, on the Black Death looks at pogroms and the persecution of Jews during the Black Death. So I have a paper with Theresa Finley on this. So that's another striking kind of phenomenon of the Black Death, where this minority group were blamed for the Black Death, and then some parts of Europe, particularly in Germany, they were treated pretty brutally. There were some kind of awful pogroms, some of the worst pogroms against Jews before the 20th century and the Holocaust. So we look at that relationship, and we find the severity of a Black Death doesn't have a monotonic relationship with likelihood Jewish community would be victims of pogrom. If a Black Death was very, very severe, there's a lower chance of having a pogrom. But if you have a Black Death, on average, that does prompt pogroms. So there's a difference between the Black Death overall and the severity, and we interpret this in terms of the role that Jews played in the European economy.
It's clear that the Black Death is an enormously rich source of material for economic historians, whether your perspective is Malthusian or Smithian or institutional, as you were talking about. Can it tell us anything about what we're living through now?
It's a great question. I think it does. I would caveat that with the which is perhaps obvious, more recent pandemics like the Spanish flu are in some sense more informative because they took place in a world which is more similar to our own. There was, you know, modern science, there was types of institutions and institutional response that we would be able to undertake now. But if you want to see a really clean experiment, a massive demographic shock, imagine this is perhaps a nightmare scenario, but imagine there's another pandemic or pandemic.
Oh, please no.
As bad as COVID, but with a higher mortality rate, then the Black Death is a shock you want to study. That's the first thing. Like, secondly, we can't do much about the long run consequences of these diseases if we study recent epidemics, but we can learn a lot from a Black Death if we want to see how this affects things in the long run and prove what channels things are affected. So in the Black Death case, things depend, like the impact of a Black Death is heterogeneous. So it's incorrect and overly simplistic to say it has one effect. Like, so does a Black Death raise wages? Well, it depends. It depends on the initial factor endowments of an economy. If it's labor scarce or labor abundant, and it depends on the initial institutions. The demise of serfdom occurs in England, but it doesn't occur in Central Europe or Eastern Europe. This interaction of the disease with existing trends, I think, is something clearly relevant for thinking about COVID.
Mark Koyama, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tim. That's great. Really enjoyed it.
There's far more in this paper that we can discuss here, so my advice is to download it and read it. It's called The Economic Impact of the Black Death. The authors are Mark Koyama, Noel Johnson, and Remy Jedwab. And it's DP15132. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the most innovative economic research every week, so subscribe to Vox Talks and you'll never miss an episode. And remember, you can find 10 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.